Hello and welcome to the Student Life Podcast. I'm your co-host, Kirib Egnum, and with me, as always, is my friend, co-host, and colleague, Mr. Anthony Giannoumis. Good morning, Anthony.
Good morning, Kira. How's life?
It's good. It's very good.
Yeah?
I had to laugh a little bit about today's topic.
Oh, boy.
Because I was imagining myself, once again, two teachers being hyped up about the background chapter.
Sure, sure. It's one of those things that is critically important, but it can be a challenge.
Let's be honest. It's not the most popular chapter to write in a thesis.
No, it's not. It can feel like drudgery at times.
Yeah.
Yeah, like you're just kind of putting in the hours and you're not actually creating anything from it.
But we are here to fix it.
Yes, we're here to make it streamlined,
mm-hmm.
effective,
mm-hmm.
efficient,
yeah,
and most importantly, satisfying.
We are in the gym showing you how to lift those manuals.
Yes, and then your supervisor will be there to spot you on a day-to-day basis.
I'm already seeing it in my head. I wonder when this analogy breaks. It hasn't done yet. But the so-called background chapter,
yes.
We find it in numerous places. From technical report, mm-hmm. a project report, a thesis.
Journal articles. Especially important in project proposals.
Also.
Because you really got to lay that foundation of there's a clear justification for doing this.
Yes. So it is a common component. Mm-hmm. of a lot of the literature that we have to write,
yes.
as students and later as researchers.
Definitely, definitely.
And it's certainly something that is part of a job.
Mm-hmm.
If you are working at a company where you somehow are involved in the decision-making process,
right.
You may not be a manager, but you may be the person supplying the manager.
Yeah.
With the info to influence their decisions.
You may be tasked with this kind of, we need to know how to do this, and you need to go and find out what all ways that was done in the past, and then you have to kind of come up with something.
Exactly, or even worse, like you need to write 2 pages on why we should do X instead of Y.
Oh boy, kind of an effectiveness scenario.
So it's a typical challenge when you are a domain expert.
Mm-hmm.
You may not consider yourself a domain expert, but when you have graduated any type of education, you are a expert on that field.
And in the context of your organization, you may be seen as the expert.
So oh, yeah.
Regardless of how confident you feel, you know, in many ways, it behooves you to take on that mantle and say, hey, I am this expert, and whatever challenge you give me, I will figure it out.
Exactly. And they will come to you for knowledge.
Yes.
That is knowledge that is appropriate to your domain.
Mm-hmm.
So this is something that we have to do very often. I mean, in extension, what teachers do very often in their lectures is very often just a very long background chapter.
Yeah, it's essentially a literature review.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're going to look at today why the literature review and the background chapter is important.
Mm-hmm.
How you can actually use it to something that you can profit from,
sure.
And give you the feeling that you know what you're doing,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I believe strongly that also makes it more motivating and fun to do.
Mm-hmm. And can we just start by maybe clarifying some things? We're talking about background chapters here, but it goes by many different names.
Yeah.
Sometimes people call it an analytic framework or a theoretical framework. And then some people differentiate between a literature review, which focuses on previous research, and a background chapter, which can also include kind of trends in society and maybe trends in technology or whatever the topic is that you're researching. We're going to just try to give some overarching advice for anyone delving into any of those versions of the quote-unquote background chapter.
Yeah. In a master's thesis, you would typically have all these 3 elements present.
Yeah.
But in a project report, you may possibly skip the research part.
Yeah, you may combine different elements. I've written articles where I've had a theoretical framework, but I've also built into that kind of here are the emerging trends in this field in society and not necessarily only in research literature.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel that students often have a perception of the background chapter. It's just something that they have to do.
Right, right.
It's not necessary. They don't understand why. But I'd like to give a little bit of insight to, let's say I'm a censor. I'm grading someone's thesis. And what do I look for in the background chapter? Because chances are, if I'm already picked as someone who is going to grade this, I should have probably known a lot of what I'm reading in the background chapter already. Mm-hmm. So what kind of skill am I assessing? What am I looking for? Yeah. What kind of knowledge about the person and the document am I trying to gather out by reading the background chapter? Mm-hmm. It turns out the background chapter can be like this hidden gem. It can really have a strong impact and a strong first impression. Now, let's put this in context. You've already then written as the reader, I've just read your super short, super argumentative, problem-based intro chapter.
Yes.
Which fully convinced me.
Yeah.
Now I'm jumping off the deep end of the pool, and I'm going to assimilate all the knowledge necessary for the rest.
For you to understand what comes after.
Exactly. Yeah, and what you want to achieve as a student, you don't want to get this noise where, you know, the record player halts.
Yes.
in the background chapter. You just don't want to put them to sleep.
No, it shouldn't just be a recitation. You shouldn't be simply kind of regurgitating what we already know or doing it in a way that's just that's not really engaging the reader. And what I mean when I say engaging is you don't need to necessarily be prosaic. You just need to be able to communicate it in a very synthesized way, in a way that shows deep reflection and understanding of the literature.
I break it down into three properties that I'm looking for. And they are codependent, but there's also a level of importance on them.
Right.
The first one is that the background chapter should be educational.
Okay, yeah.
So there needs to be some transferal of knowledge to the reader.
I mean, ultimately, the background chapter has to represent a very wide array of topics, both within your individual research topic, but also a different array of knowledge and data that you're trying to cover. So no one person's going to go and read all the stuff that you cite in your background chapter. They're looking to you to give them the important features of that research.
Furthermore, it cannot be a background chapter without having an educational component.
Yes.
In which case, it's just, what is it if it's not educational? Next, it needs to be interesting.
Yeah.
It can be educational without being interesting, in which case, it's super hard to read for the reader.
Yes, yes.
That would just be dry, just endless material.
Right.
Without any concern for the psychological well-being of the reader.
Right, right.
So it has to be interesting in order to motivate the reader and keep the reader's attention.
Mm-hmm.
But so ways of doing that is to use, you know, proper language, good organization.
Clear writing.
Convincing connection so that it keeps the motivation of the reader. And then thirdly, and now we're approaching the summit, it has to be effective.
Yeah, absolutely.
So... What you do is the nice thing about any type of research that we do and the reports that we write, they are an effective compression of knowledge.
Yeah.
So it's like a syringe of knowledge that you just inject into your head.
Okay.
So you take, say, 17 weeks of work by a student. You compress that into 60 pages that can be read, maybe in a day or two.
Right, right.
Effectively. Mm-hmm. And which means that I have absorbed 17 weeks of knowledge in 2 days.
2 days, yeah.
So it needs to have that effectiveness.
Yeah, yeah.
If it means that I can read those 10 pages and I have learned more than I would do on my own in the same period of time, then it has been effective.
But I think what you mentioned before is important to kind of point out here. It's not simply the compression of knowledge and then the regurgitation of that.
Correct.
It really has to be contextualized
within
the topic and the domain that you're conducting your research or your writing.
And that's why I look at it as a pyramid.
Yeah.
First and foremost, it needs to be an educational fundament, right? An educational base of knowledge that actually is the content.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Then it needs to be made into an interesting read.
Right, right.
And then third, it needs to give the reader a feeling that they are actually more effective at learning by reading that text.
Yeah.
So it can be motivating and educational, but not very effective.
Right,
so it can be long drawn, essentially.
Yeah,
not getting to the point or elusive. So I have an analogy that I use on my students to separate background chapters in level of quality.
Oh, nice.
Because I think it's important that students themselves get the ability to assess the quality of their own work.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that makes them independent from supervisors, or they can utilize the supervisors differently.
Yeah.
More as sparring partners rather than suppliers of recipes.
Right.
So I use the museum analogy to explain. So imagine for yourself that the background chapter is a museum.
Okay.
Everyone has been to a museum.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And imagine yourself, you know, maybe you're on a holiday trip somewhere. Maybe it's the Louvre in Paris or some other funny exhibit somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But imagine three ways to organize the museum, three ways for you to have the museum experience in level of quality. The lowest level on a museum is only the exhibit.
Right. Yeah. That's the kind of most granular.
you enter, you go past all the, I don't know, all the pictures on the walls, and you make up your own independent thoughts, apparently, and you look at them, you don't necessarily know what to look for.
Right, right.
And then you're out.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then, yeah, I've been there, done that.
Yeah.
Nothing that sticks. So you are left to your own interpretations.
Yeah.
That is the most basic level of a background chapter.
And I think your example with the Louvre is a great one, because so many people go there to see the Mona Lisa and then leave.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of this spectator tour of the museum.
It's as a sensor later, seeing such a background chapter is that fine. Okay. It's there.
Yeah.
It's there. You know, it cannot be faulted in any way.
No.
But certainly didn't score any extra points there.
It didn't fulfill its potential.
No, it didn't. Then is the next level of a museum.
Okay.
And this is the audio guide.
Ooh, okay.
So with the audio guide, at least you get commentary.
Yes.
But you get commentary at each image.
Right, right.
So the commentary is on per nugget.
Yeah.
There's no overview.
No.
There's nothing to help you see the bigger lines.
Right.
The bigger stories.
Right, right, right.
There is no supplementary knowledge. It's all very just there.
Yeah.
And then you play the piece for that one image. It tells you to go to the next. You go to the next. It plays you the piece on that image.
Right.
And you could essentially just go from image to image, and there's just no connection.
Or you could randomize the images, and it's still no connection.
More or less.
Yeah.
So at least there's commentary.
At least there's some discussion about it.
Yes, so at least now you're not left to your own mental capacities to figure out why you see the images you're seeing and the significance of them.
It's not just going, looking at the Mona Lisa, taking a selfie, and then leaving. You're actually going and learning a little bit about the painter, learning a little bit about the period maybe, and maybe stopping at a couple other exhibits.
And then there is the highest level.
Okay.
And this is the personal museum guide.
Ooh, the museum guide.
Now, nothing is more captivating, interesting than to have some person who obviously has a great interest that can bring you from piece to piece. But not only do they do that, like they tell stories surrounding the piece. They make overarching comments like, in this room, you will find that all the painters have been inspired by this one paradigm that was brought forth by this and that happening.
Right, right.
Or you can notice the brush strokes on all the images on this wall because they're using the same technique. Right. Yet in contrast, you'll see the images on the other wall have used a different type of painting brush stroke or whatnot.
You may have recalled from a painting we saw 5-10 minutes ago,
yes.
You know, a technique used there that's also being used here.
All of a sudden, there is a purpose on the order of things.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, there is an overarching story. There's supplementary information.
Definitely.
It's not just, it's still images on the wall.
Fundamentally, yeah.
Yes. But, and now there's this, the packaging of it.
Mm-hmm.
And leaves you as a museum goer inspired.
Yes.
And it leaves you educated.
Much more likely to remember what
yes.
the heck you saw.
And entertained.
Yeah, yeah.
So it makes it into a fantastic mm-hmm. Experience.
Yeah, yeah.
And I hope that every listener has been to a museum like that.
Right.
And not just going through, you know, from piece to piece.
And the reason why this analogy, I think, is really effective and important is because as the reviewer is reading the rest of your document, if you've just given them the selfie picture with Mona Lisa, they will probably not remember why it was important for your research.
Right.
If you give them the audio guide, they might remember why it was important, if something stuck out to them or if there was a particular topic that you addressed that they've already kind of had background knowledge on. But the tour guide, the guided museum experience, it will ensure you that whenever your reviewer gets to later parts of your thesis, whether you're talking about your results or you're talking about a discussion or even the conclusion, that they will recall, oh yes, this person addressed this in their literature review and I understand fundamentally what the issues are that are at stake.
It certainly gives you the ability to show off skills that you may not be able to show off in other parts of your document.
Right.
The ability to provide context, the ability to write well in stories,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The ability to digest information.
And
provide insight. That means that the museum goer themselves do not have to reach those conclusions on their own behalf.
Definitely.
So they get more than just the images. Right, they get this huge context,
right.
And the ability for you to showcase that you can create this context.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, that is such a wow factor.
It really is.
And it's again, I don't think there's anything magical about it.
No.
But
it's doable.
It's doable, and we're gonna present a method later anyway on how to actually do it. But this is our goal.
Yeah, and it's important also because in later sections of your thesis, you will be returning to what you said in the literature
review. Well, if you've done it well, you'll remember that you have to return.
Yeah.
But if you just, well, to be honest, a lot of students write it rather late. So there's nothing, I mean, so while they write the other stuff, there isn't anything to return to at that point.
No, I understand.
But I think if you look at it like this, maybe the process of doing the background chapter can be motivating and more fun to do,
mm-hmm.
And I would think that you would be more effective at doing it as well.
Definitely.
Because when you have fun doing something, you probably do more at it.
Yeah, if you enjoy it, there's easier to be motivated.
And if you look for the signs of you being the museum guide,
mm-hmm.
then I believe you will be more proud of what you're doing,
yes.
And you will feel that you're doing something that has a high level of quality and that it will be appreciated by the reader.
And the best literature reviews can actually be published as an independent form of research.
Oh, yeah, certainly. Well, a lot of people do masters and even PhDs that are entirely just what is called meta studies and literature reviews.
Mm-hmm.
When the body of knowledge out there is so large that someone needs to digest it all.
Right.
And create this museum experience.
Yes, yes.
Where on the walls are just individual papers.
Yes. And this is done in medical literature
a lot.
Systematic reviews and meta-analyses.
Yes.
And it's exactly as you kind of you're saying, it's there to kind of say, well, we've done a lot of research in the last 15 or 20 or 30, 40 years, and nobody's taking the time to kind of look at all of it from a very high level and say, okay, what do we know about, for example, obesity and cancer risk?
Right.
And then they just go through everything very systematically, what's been done.
It's not that common in engineering because it is, especially in computer engineering, it seems to be moving forward so fast that you don't necessarily have time to look back.
No.
But it still applies. You can still be a museum guide just within the past 2 years.
And it can be challenging to do it systematically in certain disciplines. In social science, for example, we often have many, many, many different ways of referring to the same concept. And so then systematizing how you search the literature can be really, really challenging.
Yeah.
And maybe even impossible because you have this idea of concepts being just so not yet fully defined.
You're right. So now that we know what we're looking for, what the goal is, we want this highest level. We want this museum experience in the background chapter. So let's go back and talk about the actual content.
Okay.
And then we'll start to look at how to get the content, how to create the background chapter rather than just write it. And then we're going to talk about actual writing tips.
Okay.
In order to, you know, the sentences, the type of language, and all the tips and tricks that you and I probably do subconsciously.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
So usually you have three bases you need to cover. Mm-hmm. You can have that as a checklist. Just make sure that you've covered all these three bases somehow in the background chapter. There is no particular preference on how you organize it content-wise.
Mm-hmm.
I think the biggest preference is it needs to be organized somehow pedagogically.
Okay.
Like things need to build on top of each other in the logical order.
Sure.
Other than that, you are not specifically bound. It doesn't have as strong as a structure as, say, the introduction chapter had.
Yeah, exactly. It's a little bit more free-flowing, but I still think some general advice in terms of starting macro and moving micro is really useful. If there is any sort of an analogous idea in your discipline.
Yes. Imagine yourself as a museum guide walking into a hall with several pieces in it.
Yeah.
And then what would you say in that hall before you point out the individual pieces?
Exactly.
Right?
You're not going to go beeline to a painting, talk about that painting, and then say, oh, and then also there's a lot of other paintings.
Right. So the first base you need to cover is the domain knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is already set up by yourself in your intro chapter.
Exactly.
This is the part where you back up all these statements that you did that now need a little bit more explanation, perhaps maybe some numbers and so on. Also, it may be the place where you talk more about the nouns from your problem statement.
Definitely. And those are the flags you want to make sure incorporated in your literature review.
Yes, it's easy to just build a checklist.
Yeah.
If you listen to our previous episode about building a problem statement, you already have that list.
Yes.
So you just, carry that list onto the background chapter.
Mm-hmm.
And so this would cover base one, which is the domain knowledge.
Right.
And then there is something else which could be close to domain knowledge, but I call this the required prior knowledge.
Okay.
Which is more like this: these are the concepts I need to explain to you before we move on.
Right.
This may be unrelated to particular arguments that I made.
Sure.
So let's say I do something in computer networking and I haven't really mentioned computer networking. Then now in the background chapter, I go, all right, we need to talk about networking protocols for a second.
Right.
I need to explain these things to you.
Yes.
Before we move on.
And generally, I would say that's probably the highest level of synthesis you're going to do because you're going to be taking stuff that may have gone back for hundreds of years worth of research and really condensing it to maybe one or two statements.
Yeah.
Just to kind of say, there's a lot of research in this field, and then here's basically what we've come to the conclusion.
It can be if you do computer science or maybe if you do social science and use statistics, then maybe in the background chapter you want to explain a particular statistical methodology.
Yes, exactly.
Of some sort.
Sure.
Something that is, it's not you know, it's just a tool you used. Mm-hmm. And so you just want to explain that tool. Like, here's a hammer, and here's a screwdriver, and this is how they work.
There is such a thing as a hammer and a screwdriver, and they work.
But you need to try to not get ahead of yourself and in the background chapter start explaining how you use them, because that is called your methodology or your approach, and that comes later.
Right, right, right. If now, you have a particular methodology that's commonly used, then it's okay to kind of preview it in the background. But you're not going to go in depth to it because, again, you, like you said, it's in the methods chapter.
You need to keep those two parts separate. And then there's the third base, and that is the state of the art in the research, which is also often called the lit survey or literature survey.
Or literature review.
Or literature review.
Your supervisor may call it something totally different, but they all do the same thing.
Or the I hate it.
Yeah. That's actually one of my favorite things to do is the survey literature. I don't know why. It's just so exciting for me to kind of dive into the research and to start making the connections between different fields of research and even different researchers.
Oh, I hate getting started.
Oh, yeah.
But when I'm like more than halfway through, I feel that I leveled up.
Okay. Then you're happy with what you achieved.
Yeah, yeah. Then I start to feel the benefits of the assimilation of more knowledge. But when I'm in the trenches, it feels I'm not a good talent at, let's say, bookkeeping and organizing myself.
But I think that's natural. I think the beginning stages of a lit review, you typically are very chaotic, and we're gonna provide some techniques for keeping things organized. But ultimately, you have to be comfortable with the idea that you're not gonna figure it out right off the bat, and it's gonna take time.
Which reminds me of something. It is a common approach for a supervisor-student relationship in the beginning of a project that the first thing they do is to release you into the wild and say, go find literature.
Yeah.
Go read literature. What they want to do then, I think, is they want you to get domain knowledge and identify a pebble in the shoe.
Right, right, right.
How that is not my personal preference as a supervisor. I probably want to sit down and identify the pebble together with them.
Okay.
Rather than, because it is a very undeterministic process for them to go out on their own.
They need guidance.
Yes.
They need a hand to be held along the way.
Especially when time is a factor. It's very hard to identify. So at what point should I have found a pebble?
Is it 3 months?
Is it by the end of the year? At what point? It's hard to see the end in the light of the light in the end of the tunnel when you do it in that way. And maybe for longer projects that might be appropriate, but for shorter projects, it's like, no, we need to nail this pretty quickly, and then we have a targeted search for literature rather than just a scattered search.
Definitely.
So these are the three bases. If you have covered these three bases, you have completed, let's say, the educational base.
Okay.
Now you have all the content. Mm-hmm. Next is essentially making it interesting and so on. But we will start talking about the literature survey, because that is obviously the most challenging part.
It's where you spend most of your time.
Certainly. And this is also where you need more scaffolding than because the first part, the first base, which is the domain knowledge, you got that from your intro chapter.
Right, right.
So that one's more or less, that's a scaffolding you can reuse there.
Yeah.
And the required prior knowledge, that is easy to find from the nouns that you use in your problem statements or in a quick talk with your supervisor. But very often you are pretty good at already detecting that yourself.
Definitely.
So it is the literature survey that is the hardest part, and that also has the highest payoff.
Yeah, or the most time wasted.
Yes. So do we want to talk about how to do the literature survey now, or should we maybe do that on the follow-up episode?
I think we should make this a two-parter, maybe even a three-parter, depending on how long the second part goes.
That's true. So
stay tuned.
Before we end, do you have a pro tip for today?
A pro tip? I think, I think a lot of my pro tips are going to come in later episodes. But for background work, I think the first step really is to kind of stay in communication with your supervisor. Because whether you're operating on a longer timeline or a shorter timeline, it's not going to be effective if, like you said, you just go out into the wild and try to do it all on your own. You need to check back in, let them know what you found so they can kind of reorient you or redirect you. It's kind of like playing that game Marco Polo, where you're in a pool and somebody says Marco, and everybody else is have their eyes closed, and they say Polo, and then they try to find each other.
You Americans have the weirdest games.
Oh, okay, forget it. Look up Marco Polo. Pool game.
All right. My pro tip for today is to be the museum guide.
Yes.
That's your level of aspiration. I think just having that aspiration alone will heighten the quality of the document. It will influence how you write.
Definitely.
And it will influence how you structure. Yeah. So just keep that analogy in mind of you taking the reader on a personal guided tour and how that would feel.
And if you have any thoughts or suggestions around the background chapter or literature reviews in general, or you'd just like to reach out to us and tell us how awesome we are, you can reach us at studentlife, all one word, at hioa.no. Again, that's studentlife@hioa.no.
Have a great student life.